Welcome back to Frank on Target, your haven from the commercial break jungle. We know those ads can be quite the adventure, but now it's time to return to our own wilderness of politics, controversy, and the great outdoors.
My point being is they don't give you nothing. It costs.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, absolutely.
And your opponent
wasn't
adequately funded.
Well, I don't really have any knowledge of any of that. My point is simply that I don't know that they did a good job, and I don't think.
Well, you can't put lipstick on a pig.
Yeah, I don't think they did a very good job of managing Representative Brewer's opponent in this recent primary season either. But be that as it may, one thing that I would like to talk about that I think is very important for your listeners, where the Freedom Caucus is concerned, is. And this has a little to do with folks and the way he reports things, but they are so obstinate that the mainstream media is now referring to everybody else in the House Republican caucus as moderates or centrists or rhinos or whatever term you want to call us. And so I want to reiterate to your listeners that Robbie Robbins, when he got elected, voted for the largest income tax reduction in the history of the state. That was my very first vote. I then voted for no exception abortion bills twice. I voted for constitutional carry at every opportunity I got, clean constitutional carry. And I have voted for every measure that has restricted the LGBT and whatever other letters they have in their arsenal now when they have come up. And so I'll put my conservative credentials up against anybody. And it ain't just me. There are many members of the House Republican Caucus that vote the same way I do. And for them to act like if you're not a member of the Freedom Caucus, you're not conservative is crazy. Well, and I will also say that they take positions on economic issues that are not conservative, and they're not traditionally Republican ideals that they espouse. So I just want to get that out there.
Well,
I'm done talking about them.
Robbie, I can tell you that people hijack terms and titles.
Right.
All right?
Well, the Democrats are really good at that.
Well, we'll jump on them later.
Yeah.
But amongst the Republicans,
right,
there are, and I don't know any Republican, all right, and I think I know a few that aren't America first.
Right.
All right?
That I think we can all agree on.
I think we can all agree on it.
Yeah.
But how come a certain number of people that are extremists get to hijack that title and that moniker?
Right. I don't know. I don't know how that... Well, I guess I do know because, again, they are really, really good with social media, and so many people nowadays are just absolutely addicted to social media, and they stay on it. And so look at the Democrats. They'll say something enough times that people just start spouting it off like it's factual when it may not be. But they're good at that, and so they know they can't win on ideas, and they know they can't win in actual votes, so they have to spin things in the media that benefits their positions, basically.
Listen, I really didn't want to get partisan here, but I got it. But this is funny because you said something about Kamala Harris hijacking.
No, I said Democrats.
Oh, Democrats. Democrats. Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
For lack of a platform, she's adopting Trump's kind of platform.
Well, that's, again, if you know, if the mainstream media is really good at it, just basically changing stories and acting like this is the way it's been the whole time.
Yeah.
So
which really reinforces the point that we really have to watch where we get our information.
Absolutely. And to that end, I think anybody who has dealt with me over the course of my career, and certainly over the last 8 years, six as DOT commissioner and two as a member of the House, knows that if you call me, text me, email me, I'm going to get back to you. It might not be right away, but I am going to get back to you, and whatever your issue is, I'm going to do my dead level best to address it or get you to a person who can address it. And I take great pride in that, and take my job seriously in representing the people that live in District 97.
Now, I got a question for you, and this is something that we hadn't talked about, and it's just popped in my head. You succeeded Representative Mandy Kimmons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you something. I loved the hell out of her. She was. I mean, and I supported you early on based on her recommendation because
right.
I trusted
yep.
I trusted her and her judgment, and when she supported you, I said, you know, she wouldn't she wouldn't throw us a curve.
Right.
Now, that being said, how's she doing?
I think she's doing wonderful. In fact, I saw her last Thursday. We had the swearing-in ceremony in Columbia for Chief Justice John Kittredge, who is our new Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, and they had a reception for him at the law school in Columbia, and I saw Judge Kimmons there, and I think she is absolutely loving being on the family court bench. That is not for me, but she is ideally suited for it, and I think she is enjoying it. I have heard nothing but good reviews on her short time on the bench. I've been in front of her a couple of times, and she absolutely knows what she's
doing.
Now,
granted, she's a young woman, but I think the majority of her practice has been, her private practice was in family law, correct?
Yeah, well, I met Mandy when I left the solicitor's office. She came in with a new crowd, so I met her, I think, around 2005, and she was a prosecutor for a few years, and then she went into private practice, and yes, family law was part of her private practice when she did that.
Yeah.
And I've just always known her to be very hardworking, very smart, and she, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but she had a very difficult time when she delivered her son, and she almost didn't make it, and so I think she has a great appreciation for what a child means to a mother and father, and I think she has worked with people both in the public sector and the private sector that make her very well qualified to be in that role. And tell you what, we're getting ready to do in Dorchester and Berkeley, and hopefully we'll get it going over here in Colleton as well. We're going to have a safe babies court, and the idea there is going to be to try and not continue to follow the traditional DSS foster care model, but to try and treat these young parents, and sometimes they're not young parents, sometimes they're older parents, but try to get these parents in a position where they can care for these children and help them deal with the issues that they have. And she is going to, I think, probably head that up in Dorchester. And she's excited about it. And I think she will continue to be a very good family court judge.
I was disappointed when we lost her, you know, to, lost it to her career.
Right. Right.
Because she was incredibly responsive as a representative.
She's from good, as we say here in the Low Country, she's from good people.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's just how she was raised and how she is.
Yeah. And if she brings that same kindness to and tenacity and
yeah,
you know, everything else, if she brings that to the, what do you call it, to her judgeship, I mean, she yeah. has to succeed. And hey, listen, not for nothing, we didn't lose too much except for good looks. We got you.
We got somebody that's relatively responsive,
but you know, well, but
we both
not easy on the eyes.
Yeah, we both took some bullets when she resigned and I filed. But listen, she had no idea that the former family court judge was going to resign. That judge made a decision that was in the best interest of her family, and she made it without any real forewarning to anybody. Nobody knew she was going to resign, but when she did, that was an opportunity for Mandy to do what Mandy has probably always wanted to do, and we're all the better for it because she's a great family court judge. So
we should being a parent part of the requirement. Yeah.
It may come that way, and I, you know, with respect to the judges, we did a good job last session of reforming how they are selected and then elected. We gave the governor a role in that process. That was the big hue and cry that we heard. And I was on the ad hoc committee that studied what needed to be done. And I think we've reformed the process. Now what we need to do is look at the magistrate system.
All right. If
I think we'll do that this session.
If you would,
yeah.
Just give me a compare and contrast. What was before, and what is now with the new legislation?
With the new legislation. So the big issue that that I think was being put forth by the advocates for, they call it judicial reform. I think it's more, I don't think we're reforming the judiciary as much as we're reforming the process for electing the judiciary. But be that as it may, the big argument is that the folks that serve on the Joint Merit Selection Commission had too much influence over the candidates. And so back in the 90s, Frank, the legislature set up this Joint Merit Selection Commission to screen the candidates, because quite frankly, when I was a kid and even into my years in high school and college, if you wanted to be a judge, you needed to be a legislator. That's kind of how it worked. You didn't become a judge without being a legislator. And so in the mid-90s, they changed all that and said, no more, we're not having legislators running for judgeships. And so they created this commission to screen the candidates with the help of the South Carolina Bar, and that's what we've been doing. But the members of the commission were completely selected by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate and the Judiciary Chairman in the Senate. And you have 10 members, 6 of which were legislators and 4 of which were practicing members of the bar. And that, I think, was the biggest gripe, was that they were all handpicked by the leadership in the House and the Senate. So we changed that and reduced, we changed the number of members to 12. So there's 4 from the House, 4 from the Senate, and 4 from the governor. The argument was, and a lot of people argue, the governor should pick all of them, and we're not, no, that's not how the state has ever been run, and we're not going to run it that way now. But we will give the governor an opportunity to weigh in and have people on this commission. So we got 12 members instead of 10, and they will now vet the candidates, and we put term limits on the commissioners. Previously, they could serve at the pleasure of the speaker or serve at the pleasure of the president of the Senate, and now they can only serve 4 years. And what's important about that is that the judges serve 6 years. So if I screen you the first time you're elected as a judge, when you come back for your re-election, I will not be there. There'll be somebody else seeing you. And that was the other thing we heard, was that judges are afraid to come back in front of legislators on their reappointments. And so those are the big things that were done structurally to make the process better. There are a lot of other things involved with the actual elections that I would need to have the actual bill in front of me to articulate really well. But those are the main things that I think will help. There was also this argument that lawyer legislators have some advantage in front of judges, and I can tell you that Parker's hired Speaker Smith to represent them in the Murdoch litigation, and Speaker Smith got body slammed by the trial judge in that litigation. And I can tell you that I went in front of a judge after I got elected to the House and argued for my client to get some bond restrictions removed, and the judge just basically told me to take a hike. So it just is, perception and reality sometimes.
Well, the perception was ugly.
Yeah.
The perception was ugly.
Well, the perception was driven by folks within the system that don't like the way the system is for whatever reason. But they did a good job of ginning it up and convincing people that there's a problem. I can tell you is we got great judges across the board in South Carolina. Are they all perfect? Heck no, none of us are. But our judges are top-notch, and they are very good at applying the law and rendering decisions that are sound. And I told Attorney General Wilson during the ad hoc meetings that, everybody in the country and across the world got to see the South Carolina judicial system up close and personal during that 6 week, 8 week Murdoch trial. And Judge Newman did a fantastic job. And so,
We don't have to agree on Judge Newman.
Well,
but anyway,
I got you.
Is Alan Wilson our next governor?
I don't know. It's a little early still to see who all is going to run. And I think that
he's a young man.
This election, this presidential election, is very important with respect to the future of South Carolina, because if President Trump wins, and I sure hope he does, he could be making appointments within his administration that could have a trickle-down effect for South Carolina politics.
When President Trump is President Trump again.
I like the way you say that.
I think he's not going to make a lot of the same mistakes he made in the first term.
I sure hope not. He appears to be a very trusting man, and I think some folks let him down.
The truth of the matter is anybody that's reached that level of success in their life has to delegate and trust.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe he had better judgment when delegating and trusting when in the business world than he did in politics.
It's interesting you say that, because those are two different animals, and I was always concerned about the fact that he has been in business, and Washington does not operate the way that private sector does, but I think he learned a lot, and I think he'll be ready on day one this time. But again, who he picks to work for him up there this time could alter how things shake out and stuff.
Well, he's been what do you call it? He's been surrounding himself with a whole bunch of go-getters, you know, yeah. really.
Yeah.
I mean, this...
Well, you look at the Republican field this time, and we had some really good candidates that have a lot to offer. And so I think that if you compare the two parties, I mean, we've got all kinds of young people that are ready to go. He's got a lot to choose from.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Vance thing. We're down. I'm just looking at the clock here. We're winding down. We're at about 48 minutes.
Okay.
So we got about another 10 minutes.
Yep.
This Vance thing. He's a tiger.
Yeah, he is.
He's a tiger.
He's got a great story. So, you know, again, you look at the candidates that we've had, and Tim Scott's got a tremendous story.
Oh, my God.
Nikki Haley has a tremendous story. And J.D. Vance has a tremendous story. I mean, I didn't know anything about Senator Vance prior to him being picked.
But after he was picked, you watched the movie, right?
Well, I did watch the movie, okay. And it was well done. And that is really, particularly when you look, well, all three of them, when you look at the three of them, you realize what the American promise is all about. When you are in this country, no matter who you are, no matter what station of life you are in, you have opportunity. This is something that Rush Limbaugh used to always talk about when he was on his radio show, was that the ability to succeed in this country is right in front of you. All you got to do is seize it. And Tim Scott always talks about the Moniz man from the Lowcountry here who gave him his first opportunity. And J.D. Vance had people in his life that helped him get out of abject poverty and a bad situation where he grew up into a place where he could thrive. And, man, he grabbed the tiger by the tail and went after it.
Well, you know? I got to tell you, I mean...
And Nikki Haley went from a little Indian girl in Bamberg to the governor's mansion to the United Nations. I mean, so, you know, one of the most, going back to the judge stuff, Frank, one of the most aggravating statements that was made during those subcommittee hearings was somebody, it was one of my fellow colleagues, I'm not going to name names, but she made the comment that there was no opportunities for young girls of color in South Carolina. And man, that thing hit me the wrong way. And I started scribbling on my pad, and I was writing down the names of African American judges, female judges in South Carolina, both state and, well, local, you know, magistrates, family court judges, circuit court judges, appellate court judges, federal court judges. And I rattled off about 8 to 10 of them whenever she got done talking. And so, to my point, it's there. That's what's great about this country and the opportunities that are there for anybody that wants to work hard and apply themselves.
Well, I mean, that's so ironic. I mean, we sat last night with one of the most powerful women in the state of South Carolina, okay? And yep. She's female and she's non-white.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean...
Well, yeah.
It just
so blows you're, me, right? You're referring to the Carlton delegation.
Yeah.
Think about who was in there last night. So you had an African-American senator. You had an African-American school superintendent. You had an African-American, very well-spoken, very articulate member of the election commission. So that statement that was made was so wrong. And there are so many opportunities for everybody to do well. And that's what I'm all about. I tell you one of the fun things one of the fun things at the State House is to talk to the pages. I mean, they're all, you know, somewhere between the ages of 19 or 20 and 22. They don't know what they want to do with their lives at this point. And I love having conversations with them just to talk to them and see what's on their mind. And I always encourage them to go for it right now. You're in your early 20s. You got your whole life ahead of you. You've got all kinds of opportunities to do whatever you want to do. Now is the time to take advantage of that. Don't wait till you're my age and then regret that you did.
Well, hey, listen, you know, I understand what you're saying,
yeah.
But I take that a little more to heart.
Yeah.
All right, because I'm doing what I want to do now.
Right.
Well, at 72.
Right.
But, you know, I know something. Yeah. 30 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago, my priorities were different.
Well, and that's a different prism, but it's nice to be able to do what you want to do at 72 as well. And
no, so, I feel fortunate because I have friends that never got to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah,
you know?
But you've worked hard and you've gotten yourself to a point where you can. But I just think that's the difference in the messages between conservatives and liberals. We are looking at it as the glass is half full, and they are looking at it as the glass is half empty.
Well. Robbie, we got to do this again sometime.
I enjoyed it, and I'm glad to do it anytime. And are we still on?
Yeah, we're still recording.
I just would like everybody to know that my cell phone number is 843-830-2754. If you live in District 97 and you need to speak with me, feel free to give me a call or shoot me a text. If you don't live in District 97, you feel free to call me and or shoot me a text, because I represent everybody in the state of South Carolina.
Well, I appreciate that. And if they're not a constituent and you can't do something for them, I'm sure you put them in the right direction.
I can hit them.
You know, I got to tell you something. What you just said was golden, because you know what my greatest, why I love the hell out of Tim Scott?
Yeah.
Alan Jenkins. Oh, is that Alan? Is his first name? Mr. Jenkins?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
If I got on the phone, and I had Frank Dixon in here before this, and we were talking.
Right.
And if I got on the phone today.
Yep.
And called Tim Scott's office, of course, I'm not going to get Tim Scott. I'm going to get some staffer on the phone. But I would be either have a visit or get a phone call from Mr. Jenkins within the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Tim, I mean, Tim's a big dog, man.
Yep.
He's a U.S. senator, you know?
Yep.
I mean, he doesn't
have... But if you're in it for the right reasons, Frank, it's about constituent service. I represent you. I don't represent me. And Tim's in it for the right reasons. And so, you know, I go to work every day with the mindset that I want to do the best job I can do for the people in District 97. And that's what I've been trying to do.
Well, again, Robbie, it's been a pleasure. We could sit here patting each other on the back all day. We ran just about an hour, and that's what we wanted. And this is a feature. And this is Frank on Target, and this is a feature. This is actually, we're putting Robbie to the task here to tell us what went on up in Columbia. So this is Red Brick Patriot Radio, WVFF 97.7 FM. And thank you very much, Robbie.
Thank you, Bubba. Appreciate it.
We here at WVFF thank you for tuning in to Frank on Target, your source for straight talk on global politics and outdoor escapades and controversy. Until next time, stay on target with Frank. You're listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, 97.7 FM.